want to thank everybody for being here this evening. It's the beginning of a school week, but you have the day off because of the holiday, and we're grateful that whatever you could have been doing, you chose to come here. And we're starting our first of three panel discussions. This is an interesting animal for us. This is our first time trying this kind of experiment, but we hope it's beneficial to everybody. So just to kind of go over one more time what Richard explained, you have some index cards on your pew and hopefully a pen. Hopefully you may have your own pen for taking notes. And what we would encourage you to do is during the course of the lesson, we're going to try to keep it to about 25, no more than 30 minutes. At the end of the lesson, we'll send some young men down to collect your questions and bring them up. And while we're gathering those, we're going to bring our speakers up to the front. We're going to set some chairs up here for us. And then we'll do our best to get through all the questions you may ask. We're going to try to hit some principles through the course of the lesson. We'll have some application, but I'm assuming and hoping that you'll have some application questions by the time we get to the end, and we'll get the three of us discussing those things. When we're all done with the discussion period, we'll have a closing prayer, and I believe Patrick is leading that for us. So to get started, let's just briefly remind ourselves, for those who may not have been here yesterday morning, what we talked about. Our application tonight is evaluating entertainment, which means looking at movies, music, any type of media, books that you would consume and feed your mind with. And once we become Christians, we need to be looking at how we make those decisions. I would assume that most of us understand that at some point we're not going to be making some of those same decisions and selections again. So what do we do to go through those things? So first off, what we talked about yesterday is we talked about how prior to coming to Christ, when we were still in bondage, there are several phrases that the New Testament uses to describe that spiritual condition. And that spiritual condition we paralleled with the condition of the Israelites in Egypt before they were redeemed. So when you start looking at texts like Matthew chapter 11, where Jesus invites those who labor and are heavy laden, those who are burdened down, come to Christ and he will give you rest. So we're burdened down by our sin. And Paul explains that we're alienated prior to coming to Christ, that we're in darkness, according to what he says in Colossians 1, that we're enslaved to sin and self in Romans chapter 6, we're without hope and most miserable, we're under the curse of the law, and we're transgressors. According to Hebrews chapter 9, there's this really powerful couple of verses that says, "How much more will the blood of Christ, who through the eternal Spirit offered himself without blemish to God, purify our conscience from dead works to serve the living God? Therefore, he is the mediator of a new covenant, so that those who are called may receive the promised eternal inheritance, since a death has occurred that redeems them from the transgressions committed under the first covenant." So there's this spiritual condition where we're lost and we're separated from God. But the point that we made yesterday is that God redeems us, and he redeems us through Jesus. That Jesus leads us out of that spiritual condition into freedom. So we have several passages, one of which is 1 Peter 1, verses 18 and 19, that say, "Knowing that you were ransomed from the futile ways inherited from your forefathers, not with perishable things such as silver or gold, but with the precious blood of Christ, like that of a lamb without blemish or spot." Or Paul in Ephesians 1, when he says, "In him we have redemption through his blood." So Jesus redeems us and turns that spiritual reality around. We're not burdened and alienated. We're not in darkness or enslaved anymore. Instead, our spiritual condition is described as we have rest in Christ. We're brought near through the blood of Christ. We're no longer in that domain of darkness, but we're in his kingdom of light. We're freed from sin and self, although now we serve a new master. We now serve Jesus. We live in hope of a future redemption. We experience the blessing of Abraham, and we have a pure conscience. So we go from one side to another because of what Jesus has done for us. But what we're going to start to talk about, and really quickly, I'm going to hit pause here for just a second because we're just not going to be able to see some of this. And I'm going to request Paul to come up just for a second. Yep. Transport and save all the settings. formatting, not transfer over. All right, so the spiritual reality that we've been redeemed from and that we've been put into, but there's something we didn't spend a whole lot of time talking about yesterday, and that describes the spiritual reality, but now we're supposed to live lives that are consistent with that spiritual reality. There's behavior that we engaged in before that's supposed to be transformed since I've been redeemed. So just for a moment, let's talk about the process of biblical change and do a little exposition over in Ephesians. So in your New Testaments, turn over to Ephesians chapter 4. And let's emphasize what the process of biblical change looks like now that I've experienced this redemption in Christ. And we're going to do this really quick so we can get to our topic of media. Starting in verse 17, Paul says, "Now this I say and testify in the Lord, that you must no longer walk as the Gentiles do in the futility of their minds. They are darkened in their understanding, alienated from the life of God because of the ignorance that's in them due to their hardness of heart. They've become callous and have given themselves up to sensuality, greedy to practice every kind of impurity. But that is not the way you learned Christ, assuming that you have heard about him and were taught in him as the truth is in Jesus." So you realize in those verses from 17 down to about verse 21, Paul says that there's this spiritual reality that they've experienced. They're now in Jesus. And that they should be walking differently now because they're not living like they used to live before coming to Christ. And now he's going to talk about, now that we're in Jesus, how does that change take place? Practically, in my day-to-day life, what does that look like? How does that happen? And so when you look back in the text, when you come to verses 22, 23, and 24, he makes 3 points, one in each verse. And in verse 22, the first thing that he says is that the truth that you've learned in Jesus is that you need to put off your old self, which belongs to your former manner of life and is corrupt through deceitful desires. So he says there are all these behaviors that you used to engage in, these habits that you developed during your life of sin, and you're supposed to stop those things. Those things are not consistent with being redeemed by Jesus. Skip down to verse 24. And the opposite of that, he says, is to put on the new self, created after the likeness of God in true righteousness and holiness. And so he says there are behaviors, habits, decisions that you replace those with, that you clothe yourself with new habits. And there's the example that I've always used with my kids, and folks here at Cahaba have probably heard me talk about it. How when I was a single guy, back before Ann and I got married, I was preaching for a congregation just south of Chicago that had some teenage boys that I spent a lot of time with. And one of their hobbies was to ride four-wheelers. So I was following one of the older teenagers through the woods on a path I had never been on before. And we were racing. He was ahead and I was trying to catch up. And all of a sudden he was no longer in my line of sight because he had taken a switchback. And what he had not told me was that the switchback was there because there's a murky, gross, disgusting pond right at the end of the switchback. So I didn't realize it was there. I thought I was coming up on a space where I could pass him, and so I had gunned it. And by the time I saw the switchback, I hit both brakes, the front a little bit heavier than the rear, and I went over the handlebars into the pond. When I came up out of that, that teenager was laughing so hard. And my clothes smelled like pond. I had to throw the leather belt away because you weren't going to get that smell out of the leather belt. And we went back to his house and I had to peel those disgusting clothes off and put them in a bag. And I didn't have a change of clothes, so I had to borrow the clothes from the teenager there and put clean clothes on. It's the same idea. That there are these corrupting habits and behaviors that are not consistent with my redemption, and I put those things off, and instead I put on the corresponding godly habits. But there's a part of that that we haven't touched on, and that's in verse 23. When he says, central to all of this is to be renewed in the spirit of your mind. There's a transformation that needs to take place on the inside. You know, there are a lot of behaviorists in the world that would try to help you break bad habits. Just stop this, stop that, and put on the corresponding right thing. And it's all about behavior. That's it. We're just retraining the flesh. But this is where the putting off those disgusting clothes and putting on the new clothes kind of breaks down. There's a transformation that's supposed to happen in my thinking. Where before I was redeemed, I thought a certain way about my behaviors. I thought certain things were okay. My conscience wasn't harmed when I did those things. I would justify those things. But now, as the Holy Spirit works on my mind through the Word, and I look at the example in the life of my Redeemer, I realize I need to think differently about the things that I do. And my values shift. And if that doesn't happen, biblical change really hasn't taken place. I need to have a change in my heart. Think about a couple of passages with me. In Proverbs chapter 4 and verse 23, where we're told to keep the heart with all vigilance or diligence, depending on your translation, for from it flows the springs or the issues of life. The writer understood that behavior flows from what's going on in here. I need to guard what's going on inside of me. Or a similar point over in Matthew chapter 12, verses 34 through 35. For out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. Out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. The good person out of his good treasure brings forth good, and the evil person out of his evil treasure brings forth evil. What's going on inside of me comes out. And it comes out in my speech. And that'll be a key point that we'll probably talk about on Wednesday when David's helping us think through social media. What's going on inside of me comes out. And I may be able to hide it when I'm in really good control, but eventually what I'm thinking and feeling spills out. So I need to be thinking about what's going on inside of me. Now, what does all of that have to do with entertainment? Now that we've spent all that time talking about all of that, what does that have to do with making redemptive selections when it comes to my media? And it has a lot to do with it. We'll make application in a second, but I want to share a couple of warnings with you. Really, I wish someone else could have been here to do what we're doing tonight. And the elders asked me to do this because the other guy was my brother. So Craig D. Hutt, the one who works in Appian Media with me, went to an art institute to get his degree in film. Which meant for several years after he had gotten his associates, he was in a very, very worldly environment, being taught worldly standards and worldly approaches to affect people in the way they think, in the name of entertainment. And after he left there, he took a year off of school so he could scrub his brain. And if you were to ask him, he might encourage every young person to rethink going to an art school. And there were some classes he skipped because of what they considered to be art. He didn't want to fill his head with that. But there are some warnings that he shared after going through that experience. And I want to share four of them with you. And there's some quotes from a lesson that he gave on this similar topic. And the first is this, because when we think about media selections, movie and entertainment, we think we're making a neutral decision. I'm just going to look for something to entertain me while I turn my brain off and just not think. And he made this point. Our art institute instructors didn't call us filmmakers. They called us culture changers. I'll just let that sink in for a second. They weren't called filmmakers. They called us culture changers. And I've shared with the group here, you know, when I was a kid, one of the congregations I worshipped with, there was an elder there that every time we walked in, he would say to the young men, you know, there's our future deacon, there's our future elder, there's our future preacher. And he was reinforcing, this is what we want you to grow up to be. In the same way, these instructors across the board were trying to help these young people realize, we want you to change things. This isn't just about entertaining. It's not just about helping people fall asleep late at night when they can't keep their eyes open anymore. We want you to change the way people think. We want you to change the way people think. How do you do that? Filmmakers have more power to influence the culture than politicians, presidents, or motivational speakers. Unfortunately, There was a time in our history where that was not necessarily so, but we're to the point. We're to the point that people in the entertainment industry have a lot of influence that we allow them to have, but they have such a powerful influence. And think about that for a second. Think about the passage over in Colossians chapter 2 and verse 8, where Paul says to those saints, "See to it that no one takes you captive by philosophy and empty deceit according to human tradition, according to the elemental spirits of the world, and not according to Christ." It's possible through our entertainment, through what we choose to watch and read and ingest, that it's possible for those things to change our way of thinking, not consistent with Jesus. And they have that as a goal. We need to take warning. They were told, let's back that up for just a second. Let's make this point. I'm not sure if you all have seen this video. I'm going to share it here in just a second. But it was put together by some folks to help us think about how movies and TV shows have changed in the last several decades to influence the way we think about how we talk.
Red, you go. Where shall I go? What shall I do?
Frankly, my dear, I don't give it.
Music's funny, right? The music's fun. It's lighthearted. But for everybody else in the room, especially adults, I want you to be thinking about this. That was scary. Did you see that chart? What they did is they shared the first time in cinematic history that a movie got away with a low enough rating because they swore one time. One time. And by 2013, you had a movie set the record for how many curse words were in it. Over 500 uses of a very gross word. And it did great in the box office. And there are people that would argue, look, our media simply reflects the culture. To some degree, that's true. But remember, they're saying we want you to be culture changers. They're not just trying to reflect. They're trying to move it. They're trying to desensitize us. And think about this. It was bright and colorful, you know, starch white with all of these colorful balls. I mean, just visually, it looked really beautiful. That was scary. Because there was a family of four getting attacked with vulgarity. That's what that was supposed to represent. The amount of swearing in that one movie. And we think that's okay. There are Christians who saw that movie. That should scare us. And that should humble us. Let's make this point. He was told writers and directors are told to write what you know. There's some validity to that. You know, you're able to communicate stories better if it's something that you've experienced. Something that you're familiar with. And so they want to bring in directors, they want to bring in actors and actresses that somehow connect to the material or they've experienced it so they can more accurately portray it. There's some danger in that. And let's talk about that danger. In Psalm 14:1, In Psalm 14:1, the psalmist says, "The fool says in his heart, there is no God. They are corrupt. They do abominable deeds. There is none who does good." Turn over to Romans chapter 1. We'll read two or three verses from there. Romans chapter 1. As Paul describes God's just wrath on all unrighteousness, he explains this progression of sin, why God's wrath is deserved, and how it's revealed. Starting in verse 21, he says, "Although they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks to him, but they became futile in their thinking, and their foolish hearts were darkened." Very similar to the language over in Ephesians that describes those Gentile ways that we're supposed to leave. Claiming in verse 22 to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images resembling mortal man and birds and animals and creeping things. The key there is at the end of verse 21 to the point that we're making. They became futile in their thinking and their foolish hearts were darkened. If you have a lot of people who have rejected God, what does it say about their way of thinking? And it says it's broken. Their way of thinking is broken. Their way of thinking is actually corrupt. But if they're being told, make movies based on what you know, what is it that they know? Corrupt and broken things. What is it that they're going to be putting out in front of us to consume? Corrupt and broken things. Not wholesome thinking, not godly thinking, broken thinking. There's a danger in them writing and producing what they know. The fourth warning is this. Writers and directors are taught to dress up the message. To dress it up. Do you know what that means? It means you take a message, whether it's good or ugly or whatever else, and you make it appealing. You slip it in. You know, the old adage about putting lipstick on a pig? You know, you try to make it look great so that people don't even realize that their thinking is being changed. They just think they're being entertained. But they don't realize that you're actually making them think that every authority in life is ungodly. Or that sexual immorality is really okay and to be celebrated. And they're slipping those things in because they make it look great or they make us laugh at it. But the ideas are just as dangerous. So what do we do? How do we go about making godly decisions, understanding some of the dangers? I think we need to go back to this. We need to go back to what Peter said in Peter chapter 1, 1 Peter 1. "If you call on him as Father who judges impartially according to each one's deeds, conduct yourselves with fear throughout the time of your exile, your time on earth, knowing that you were ransomed from the futile ways inherited from your forefathers, not with perishable things such as silver or gold, but with the precious blood of Jesus, like that of a lamb without blemish or spot." As I make decisions about entertainment, or as Doy's going to talk about tomorrow night, we make decisions encouraging our young people. How should they go about making decisions in their youth? Or Wednesday night with David, how do we go about making decisions on how to use social media? I need to allow the fact and the cost of my redemption influence those decisions. You're not going to find any kind of standard like so many swear words and you shouldn't see that. You're not going to see it. You're not going to see so much immodesty and that's it. We're not going to be able to do that for you. But maybe what are some principles that we can tie into and talk about during our discussion, our question and answer? Let's talk about four principles to help make redemptive selections. The first is this. Believers should make media selections that will please Christ, their Redeemer. I have a Redeemer. And my goal in life is to please Him. 2 Corinthians 5:9. Whether at home or absent, I make it my aim to live pleasing to Him. Or Matthew chapter 22, verses 37 through 40, where he said to him, "You shall love the Lord your God with all of your heart, all of your soul, all of your mind. This is the great and first commandment. And a second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments depend all the law and the prophets." Or 1 Corinthians 10:31, "Whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, whichever movie you watch, do all to the glory of God." And there's so many passages we can throw in there. So think about this. Would Jesus be comfortable sitting on the couch next to you as you watch that sitcom? Would Jesus be comfortable to sit next to you as you drink your icy in the movie theater? Would Jesus be okay reading that book that you pick up at the dime store? Would Jesus be okay with that? Or would it not please him? The second principle is believers should make media selections that reduce and eliminate temptation to return to the sinful behavior of our slavery. The point is this. You remember the spiritual reality of our bondage to sin and self? Hopeless, alienated from God? That's where we were. And we were there because of the sin that we engaged in that required the atoning death of Jesus. And I've been redeemed from that and brought over here. So should I watch things that encourage me to look back with longing? Should I watch things that make it enticing to do what I used to do? Or should I not? Believers should maintain a God-pleasing testimony. Well, let's back up for a second. I wasn't planning on using actual titles, but we're going to use an actual title, okay? Because I saw the trailer a couple of days ago, and it makes me sick every time I see it. Guess what? There's not a Christian on the planet that should be seeing 50 Shades of Grey. Or 50 Shades Darker, or 50 Shades Freed. That is not okay. It's not healthy. It's sinful. No Christian should watch that and have their conscience be okay. Jesus would not watch that with you. And there are groups of women who are so uncomfortable, they won't even take their husbands to go watch it with them, but they'll take their girlfriends. I was in a restaurant with a couple of my kids on opening night of 50 Shades of Grey. And there was a gaggle of about 6 women that came in that were so excited because they were going to opening night of 50 Shades of Grey. That movie entices you to engage in the type of behavior that we have been redeemed from. And I'll say this as well. Last week, as I was interacting with somebody that helps counsel those that experience domestic abuse, that type of behavior leads to domestic abuse. It is not entertainment. Man, I'm preachy. Let's move on. This is supposed to be short. Bill should be tapping his watch. Believers, when it comes to their entertainment, believers should maintain a God-pleasing testimony with those who are outside. So you think about 1 Thessalonians 5:19 through 22 that ends with abstain from every form of evil. Every form of evil. Or Philippians 2:14 through 16, where in verse 15 he says we're supposed to be children of God without blemish in the midst of a crooked and twisted generation among whom you shine as lights in the world. Or Colossians 4:5, walk in wisdom toward outsiders. I need to think about what I'm saying to the world about how great Jesus is and what the standards of godly living are with what I'm endorsing in my entertainment. Now I'm really going to date myself. Back in 1999, and Doy's like, that's nothing. 1999, the Blair Witch Project came out. This horror movie that was supposed to be so great because it was filmed from a first-person perspective. It was going to revolutionize things. And it was so much like a roller coaster, there were people leaving sick because it made them nauseous. But besides that, it was not appropriate. There was a group of Christian teens that went to that movie. And one of the elders of their congregation pulled them aside when he found out that they had gone because he didn't know ahead of time. And the reason that he spoke to them about it was this. In their congregation, there was a teenage foreign exchange student that was not a Christian. And that group of Christians took that non-Christian to an American horror film. What did that say about Jesus and Christ and the value of life? All the swearing that they saw, all the blood and guts that they saw, what did that say to that foreign exchange student? And he said, you all need to think about the decisions that you're making and the influence that you have with the decisions that you're making. And finally, we need to make selections that promote media that help renew my thinking. Not everything needs to be avoided. There are some things that help you think better and value life and value right, that encourage godly habits. I need to be thinking about those. Think about Ephesians 5:12. It's shameful even to speak of the things that they do in secret. There are some things that do not need to be in my head. I don't need to talk about it. I don't need to know about it. I need to be ignorant about those things. But there are some things that should be in my head, and I should encourage those things and choose to support those things. So I hope that those four principles are helpful as we all try to make redemptive selections with our entertainment. Now that I've gotten all preachy, why don't you take a second and fill out your cards. If you've already filled them out, pass them to the aisles. And while we move a couple of these chairs around, what we'll do is we'll have the young men come through and take up those cards. And we'll do our best to answer the questions that you have from this lesson. Okay, if you have those cards, hold them up. We'll get them. Thank you. And Doy, if you'd come join us up here. Got them? Oh, okay. That's a good question. While I go through these for a second and kind of get a feel for them, I'm going to turn one over to Doy and let him take a crack at it. And give him just a second. Whenever you're ready, I'm going to keep looking through these.
This question is from Hebrews 12:1. What would every encumbrance include, and or can entertainment become an encumbrance? Hebrews 12:1 says to lay aside every encumbrance, the sin that so easily entangles us, and run with endurance the race that is set before us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Contextually in Hebrews, we're talking about people who were tempted to return back to their life in Judaism, basically. They had become Christians, but facing persecution and reproach from perhaps fellow Jews, the temptation was to go back to that old system. So I would judge that initially that the encumbrances there, the sins there, would be the things that would go back to that old way of life. But certainly in terms of application, I would think anything that would get in our way, and that certainly can include entertainment, anything can become an encumbrance to us. And I want to say, in line with that, that there's what my father, who preached for 50 plus years, used to call respectable worldliness. And it's kind of the idea that something that's not necessarily wrong in and of itself can become a problem when we give it undue attention. And so maybe it's our sports, maybe it's our entertainment, maybe it's something else that may not be wrong in and of itself. And we might say there's nothing wrong with seeing a movie. There's nothing wrong with going out and, you know, playing these sports or whatever. But what happens when they become more important to us than Christ? And that can also kind of fit this category. So yeah, I would think that anything that would get in the way of us being able to fix our eyes on Jesus becomes something that we need to get rid of.
So this question is about the time that we spend. Most of the lesson discussion was based on entertainment content. My question is about the quantity of entertainment for Christians. Based on what information the New Testament gives us, how much time should a Christian be giving to entertainment versus studying/serving? We struggle as parents trying to limit entertainment time. How do you decide how much TV, games, sports, playtime? Also, it is a problem for us as adults. How much time should I spend on entertainment? So let me just say to those of us who are parents, we should limit. You know, Ephesians 5 says that we are to redeem the time, to make the most of every opportunity. And we certainly don't want entertainment to become an idol where it dominates our lives, you know, and certainly our children's lives. I would encourage you, if you have older children, to involve them in the process. I think it's totally appropriate for a parent to just dictate and say, this is the amount of time we spend every day or how much you spend in a week, and that's the way it's going to be. But as your children grow older, I think it's good to just ask them. And hopefully they've seen in you what comes first or what should come first, and ask them, you know, your mother and I, your father and I, we're gonna talk with you about this, but we want to hear from you. How much time do you think you should be spending every week on entertainment? If I were to say, how much should you, independent of me, limit yourself, you may be surprised at what your kids may say. And they may challenge themselves and limit themselves even more than you would. And what do you get then? You get buy-in. And you're getting a child who's thinking independent of you, thinking about their relationship with God and their relationship to media, and regulating themselves. I'm not saying that that's necessarily the case for every age, but I'm saying that we should get our children thinking about the principles involved and not just the rules, but just something to think about.
There was a question, what can a Christian who goes into the entertainment industry expect to encounter? What generally characterizes so many people and attitudes in this industry? I think the Bible passages that we looked at that explain the vanity and futility of thinking, the broken thinking of someone who's not in Christ, is characteristic of the entertainment industry as a whole. And again, I wish Craig was here, but I can share with him, or share for him, that the Art Institute that he went to prided itself on helping place graduates into occupations consistent with their field. So what that meant was, if they were into editing, if they hoped to be a producer at some point, that they would help place them, and they would actually put them into a database where production companies could match up with them. And from the week after graduation, for years, I mean, he may still get projects trying to get him to come on. But they were inappropriate, vulgar projects. They were immodest projects. Some of them were just flat-out pornography. And they were looking for people to hold a camera, hold a boom mic, help direct, help edit. And he could have made a lot of money his first week out of school. So sexual immorality is just all over the place in the entertainment industry, which is sad because the arts are beautiful things. But when you remove God from anything, you remove God from art, you start worshiping the creature. So just be prepared for that. The language gets worse. Attitude against authority gets worse. There are several Christian filmmakers that I know of that are self-taught. And they don't always go as far as some of the others, but for that reason, they didn't want to be exposed to that. So I hope that answered that question. This is for all three of us. Can you go into detail about the specific rules each of you have for your kids regarding entertainment?
My kids are grown. It is interesting how quickly this changes because, our kids were really little in the, 90s, early 90s. And now they're grown, and we do have 5 grandkids, by the way. And so the entertainment has changed a good bit, because we'd get VHS Disney movies or whatever and watch them. But in terms of their playing games and all of that, we would limit it to about an hour a day, and that would be about it. But it would also require, along with that, that they would do their homework and reading, and they weren't technically permitted to do some of the entertainment until they had done some of their other work. So there were some things along those lines that were there. Today is a little different kind of a beast because of the ability to stream and all that you couldn't do when our kids were little. So you have a little tougher task.
David.
Yeah, so let me echo some of the things I said with the first one. And let me just throw in, there's a question here that I was given about video games. And Doy is right. The first lesson I ever taught on media was about television. I mean, how outdated is that? Who watches television anymore? I mean, most young people don't even have cable now. I mean, everyone's cutting the cord. That's so, early 2000s, right? So, media is just a part of our lives. I mean, we're just surrounded by it. I mean, and we can and we should lay down some guidelines and some rules. But once again, it needs to be a conversation. So let's take video games, for example. You're not sure about a video game. Well, talk to your son or daughter, whatever the case is, and ask them, you tell me about this video game. They probably know a lot of things about it. They probably researched it, and heard from their friends. And just ask them, so what do you think about this? What's some of the content going to be? And get them thinking critically, right? That's what we're hoping to encourage. It's not just, well, these are the rules, but why are there rules? What's the standard? What's the basis for these rules? And get them to come up with some regulations for themselves. Now, we still, as parents, we can't completely trust them to guide and nurture themselves. We have to lay down some boundaries for them. We need to at least have the conversation and let them give us, because they're going to teach us a lot. I mean, media is just changing at the speed of light. I can't keep up with all of it. And I depend on my kids to learn about things. But they often give really good critique of media, right? And that's what we're wanting. We're wanting kids who have that kind of spirituality and discernment to make these choices for themselves. Is that a good job of bypassing the question?
What he said. Our rules have changed depending on the age of the kids. They just have. There's more structure and more rules, restrictions, the younger they are. So, for example, Sabina, who's 7, Grayson, who's 4, their standards are very similar. We usually don't allow them to watch anything beyond a PG rating if it's a movie, no matter what device it's being streamed through or what service it's being streamed through. There are certain cable channels that we don't allow them to watch just because we don't want their heads being filled up with fluff or garbage, even on a cartoon level. There are some really vulgar cartoons on Cartoon Network. So we don't watch Cartoon Network. They don't need that. That's more for adults. I mean, it may be animated, but I'm sorry. It's trash. It's trash. And I just sound really mean. For Kenan, we don't watch anything beyond a PG-13. We don't watch R-rated movies. Within a 2.5 hour, we don't have a set rule, but usually it's if there are more than 6 curse words, depending on the curse word, we're done. We don't need that filling up our head. So the older they get, the more the restrictions grow. We want them to be able to handle that, and we give them more freedom and we let them scratch.
Let me say one more thing about that. And you do realize that there are family media websites where it will list everything. And it will, at the end, give kind of what is the message. And sometimes that's the most serious thing. I mean, Gone with the Wind is most known for the bad word at the end. But you know, there's some messages in Gone with the Wind that are less than Christian, right? And so those are some of the subtle things that, you know, we need to pay attention to as well. And again, not just for us to read. You know, your child says, hey, can I go to the movie this weekend? Say, okay, let's look at this together. What do you think? Is that, and you may be surprised how often the kid, you won't even have to say it. I say, no, I really don't think that'd be a good thing for me to go to. That's what you want, ultimately, as a parent.
There's no way we're going to get to all these questions because I still have a stack of like 6 or 7. So we'll do the best that we can. And if we didn't get to your specific question, in just a second, we'll have Patrick close us with a prayer. Come talk to us and we'll do our best to answer your question. If that's just a little too public for you, David's email address is. But seriously, we want to get to as many questions as we can. There are a couple of different questions we can get to with one stone here that talk about language, right? So advice in determining whether to watch movies, shows that use language or violence to tell a story accurately, so historical accuracy. So like Saving Private Ryan or something along those lines. And an attempt to bring the reality of the scene or lack of moral in a character to really tell a story or make a point. So advice in determining whether to watch those. Nobody watch Hannibal. So the principle that we have tried to use is, yes, there are some times where some really heavy, heavy things happen just in the course of human history. And to some degree, we ought to be informed about some of those things. Do I need to get into the head of a serial killer to understand that that's really yucky? No. Do I need a reenactment of what he did to figure that out? No, I don't. So use your best judgment and go back to, is this encouraging me to think about my redemption and live redemptively? Or is this enticing in some way or putting unredemptive things in my head that I just don't need to fill my head with? And let me know when you figure it out. Either of you two.
Yeah, so I remember Adrian and I had this discussion after seeing the movie 42. I don't know if y'all saw that movie, but it was about Jackie Robinson crossing the color barrier. And there was a lot of uses of the N-word that we just don't use, right? And we talked about that because there were some things in the movie that we thought would be good for the kids to see. We ultimately decided not to. We just didn't feel like it was worth it. But, you know, that's a discussion you have. Honestly, I would put The Passion of the Christ in the same category. Mm-hmm. It's intense. I saw it. I don't want to see it again. You know, I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm not saying it's sinful. It may be appropriate. It may be good. But I think every parent has to decide, right? Those are tough judgment calls, I think.
And part of that that should all be thrown into the mix is the maturity of your child and where they're at. And not every kid is the same. And that needs to be taken into account. How about we do one more with Doy? I think it's a very practical question to wrap up with. And when we're done with this one, we'll turn it over to Patrick for a closing prayer. And then whoever can make it out tomorrow night, please come and join us again. And Doy will do the presentation.
I just want to make a couple observations with this. The question is, you know, how do you turn down an invite from a non-Christian friend when the movie isn't something you should see? I don't mean to sound trite, but you say no. And I don't mean that in you know, just walk away. But consider this an opportunity to have a discussion. Because you want to be able to say, I don't want to do that, and here's why. And to be able to express the why is really important. And so I take these as opportunities, I would say, as opportunities to talk about things. And the other question would be, you know, are we living in such a way that our friends already know that's probably not a movie they're going to want to see? And that would be another important part of that. And if you haven't been friends very long, that might be one thing. But if you've been friends a while, and they're not sure whether or not this is something you would want to see, then that might be another conversation to have. But I was going to say just a couple things kind of bouncing off of this and what Jeremy said. First of all, don't be surprised that the world acts like the world. Okay, that shouldn't surprise us. What's going on in the world shouldn't surprise us. And we shouldn't act surprised that, you know, these movies are using these words and showing this much skin and doing all these things that are going on, because that's what the world does. And so that, you know, that's just one of those things we have to understand up front. And secondly, as part of the conversation in all of this, I see much of this as a way to enter the conversation in such a way that we can really defend the truth. And here's what I mean by that. If the movie industry has been as bad as it is, are we surprised at all the sexual harassment issues that have been going on lately? Are we really surprised about that? They've been pushing and pushing and pushing this on screen, and now that it becomes something that's been in reality for them, that's a different issue. So here's what I would say to that, is that those kinds of issues demonstrates once and for all that moral relativism is a failure. Here are the people who've been pushing that morals are relative, that we should be able to do what we want, do what makes us happy, do all these things like that, and then they turn around and they have a definite do not touch standard. There's a conversation starter. Why do you have a standard? Where does that standard come from? Why is it that some things you recognize are definitely wrong? And I agree, this is definitely wrong. And so what the movie industry has unwittingly done to itself, I would say in the last several months, is they have undone much of the very things they've been trying to change the culture to do. They've been trying to change the culture to accept moral relativism, and they've turned around and undermined their own issues. Use that as a conversation starter. Have discussions about this.
And maybe something else to throw in there. We haven't really talked about it, but you're being asked to go see something that you don't think is right for you to go see. You don't think it's the wisest thing for you to go see. One of the things that should be in the back of your head as you're making some of those decisions is you are paying people to do what you are seeing on the screen. And what they are doing is, under normal circumstances, they should not be doing. They shouldn't be doing those things. And so it's not just about how is it going to affect me. It's also about loving my neighbor. Do I love that actor or actress or director enough to not ask them to do the things that they should not be doing? I need to be thinking about that. There are other people that are involved in that that I need to be thinking about. How is this going to affect the person that's going with me? How is it affecting the people making this? And again, going back to that really nasty trilogy, the actor and especially the actress after filming that first movie felt so perverse they had a hard time looking at each other and were taking really long hot showers because they felt so gross over what they did in that first movie. If that's what they had to do to get through the day making that thing, I probably shouldn't be paying to go see that. So I really appreciate Doy's point about using it as an opportunity to start having some of these discussions. We're supposed to shine as lights in this crooked and twisted world, and this is our opportunity to do that. So thank you all for being here and being a part of the discussion. If we did not get to your question, I think there's only one or two left, but please come up. We'd love to have an opportunity to answer that. In the meantime, let's have Patrick pray for us as we wrap up.